This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial. MK 108, and yeah, great sounds of the Stylistics, and yeah, People Make the World Go Round. Russell Tompkins Jr. I got a chance to see them back in September when they were here at the Blaisdell, along with the Three Degrees and another group. I don't know, I forgot the name of that group, but they have a new lead singer forgot his last name, but. He was with the group the Delphonics before he joined the Stylistics. And Russell Tompkins Jr., by the way, he formed his own Stylistics groups called the New Stylistics. So that's something to know. Anyway, this is Sunday. It's time for the Carol Cox Show. Carol has a guest in the studio this morning, and here to tell us all about it, Carol Cox.
Good morning. Welcome. And my guest today, I'm fortunate to have Miss Lucy Gay, who is quite prominent in the community. They're by Nye Coast and throughout the island here. Just doing many good things. And so I invited her in to just sit and talk with us and share some of the issues occurring and impacting the Waianae Coast. And we're going to also talk about the Waimanalo Gulch landfill. But wait, I just said that we were going to talk about the Waianae Coast, right? But
right.
Now we're going to talk about the Waimanalo. Actually, it's located in the Waianae Coast area.
That's right, and we claim it.
Yeah, so good morning, Lucy, and thank you for joining me. So one of the things that we got, I won't call it pressing, but it is urgent, and that is the Waimanalo Gulch landfill is up for expansion, right?
That's right.
And what is going on with that? How is the community responding or reacting to that?
The Waianae community has for a long, long time taken a unified position to oppose the existence of Waimanalo landfill in their community. And I don't know that position has changed. Despite the splitting of the neighborhood board on the coast, the board members, who are really the most grassroots level of governance for the community, I have not seen any change yet in their position.
Well, what is happening right now is a few things that I just will describe, take the liberty in describing, as a little sneaky. And that is, what is happening, there's some diversion going on in tactics being employed, where there's a discussion about the PVT landfill in that community, and rightfully so, the public should express and become vocal and active if they believe that there's a problem. But sometimes they can be asked or directed, unknowingly, focus their attentions on. So the PVT landfill, a landfill is a landfill and has all the problems associated with it. And the closeness of this landfill to the neighbors and what have you raises concerns, and the community try and mitigate that. And there are problems here, problems there. Maile landfill that was receiving ash was a problem. The community fought to stop it, and the ash is no longer going there. But the funny thing is there's a moratorium being passed, floated through the legislative process to ban landfills in certain areas along the coast. But the reality is, it left out the Waimanalo Gulch landfill. So we got two things going on. We have the Hannibal's administration, moving to expand this landfill, the Waimanalo Gulch landfill, but there's no talk about that. But all of the attention is being shifted and causing the public to think about PVT and other places. So what do you think about that?
You know, in my review of the and talk story with people who've been on the coast for at least, let's say, 20 years, I discovered that landfill issues on the coast, it's not new. And when I look back at the record, it appears that what we're seeing occurring now, the strategy, or if you want to call it, the strategy that's being employed, is in many ways a mirror of what occurred back in the 80s when Waimanalo first came up as a possible landfill. Back then, I think it was around 1978, the council, the city, established a list of possible landfill sites, identifying 17 possible sites, and then narrowing that list down to four sites, Kawailoa, Bellows, Ohikilolo, and Waimanalo. The press was on to put the landfill in Ohikilolo. And so that strategy really put pressure. It was like putting the community between a rock and a hard place. You know, like, we're going to go to Ohikilolo. And of course, that, you know, if folks out there in the radio audience have no clue where that is, it's just a a stone's throw from Makua, so it's deep into the Waianae community and deep into the coast. And it meant a deep intrusion by people involved in the business of landfilling and waste enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
So community rightfully said, you know, no, don't come that deep into our community. We don't want you there. And so that left Waimanalo open. Now the community is faced with a similar tactic today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mayor has publicly stated and said to the community at a meeting he called for the community and said that if I can't, meaning Mufi, mm-hmm. the city, cannot stay up in Waimanalo Gulch, then I have no other choice than to come to Nanakuli B.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, Nanakuli B is not as deep into the coast, but it's right in the bowels of or the center of Nanakuli community. And so, again, the community is put in that kind of a situation, rock in a hard place. What do you choose? Do you choose to the lesser of the two evils?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the tactics that succeeded back in the 80s in
mm-hmm.
putting Waimanalo Gulch on the landmark as a working landfill. And I see a similar strategy being applied. It's a little bit more. I don't know if the word sophisticated is the word, but
mm-hmm.
they've added another thing to the arena, and that is this diversion of attention. And so you're right, Carol, in that with the full attention now on the negative impact of PVT on the neighborhood, it's really put people's minds on PVT, their eyes off Waimanalo, and the deadlines that are coming up.
Right.
And that's very concerning for me,
mm-hmm.
In how these issues aren't being brought to the table. And I'm really appreciative of your radio show
mm-hmm.
as a means for us to maybe try to get back on the ball
right.
and keep our eyes focused.
Well, what is happening with the situation? And for those of you listening out there, I'll use the word diversion, and I'll use and I have the documentation to adequately substantiate my claims. And that is, if you have, as we were discussing, a more pressing issue where the public has the need to comment on a landfill that's expanding, it's and there's timelines and deadlines. And I have learned, for example, that the mayor's director of the DPP, the Department of Planning and Permitting, who will be processing this permit for the SUP, the special use permit for this landfill, has actually delayed the comment period so that the Nanakuli Neighborhood Board can have adequate time to comment. And that in itself, the Nanakuli neighborhood came up with its own neighborhood board, again orchestrated by the Hanneman administration, and then he has Patty Teruya, who's spearheading this, who is the supposedly the special events coordinator, but she's actively involved in pushing behind the scene in the quote diversion of this, and so it's very sinister. And because the public really won't have time, and I just saw the other day that on TV the city now is coming forward to say, oh, this innocuous process is occurring to expand the landfill. And that raises some issues, and I'll get back with you. The it's State Agriculture District 82, Agriculture Ag 2. Now, they want to, the new SUP will allow expansion from 107.5 acres to 200 acres of approximately 15-year capacity. Now, that's substantial, but the people are being sent toward the PVT landfill. In regards to the Nanakuli B, now, Hanneman, and it's all strategy on his part. We say sophistication, but it's just basic, elementary, sneaky practices. I wished I had. I wouldn't dignify this tactic. It's been employed many years, so it's nothing new. But number one, he is a city entity. Can't just say we're going to have the Nanakuli Bee. I'll put it in your backyard at Nanakuli Bee. There is a process. And so there would be an environmental impact statement, the acquisition of land, and all of that. But he was so quick to put fear and strike fear in the hearts of that community. But meantime, you have not heard him say anything about the Waimanalo Bulch landfill. And so, what, as I've shared with you earlier in the week, the Office of Planning under the Department of Business and Economic Development has given a position statement. And then what's with that position statement? What do you understand about it?
The state plan, the city actually has a two-prong approach to this issue of their presence, continued presence in Waimanalo. As I understand it, one is to go for a boundary change,
mm-hmm.
so that they can redesignate that property into an urban boundary and then forego having to secure a supplemental a conditional use permit major,
right. mm-hmm.
which requires community input, by the way, and a lot of conditions. So that's one prong approach. And then the other one is the Land Use Commission told them to shut down the landfill by November 1. And the city has determined that rather than do that, I say this because that was the mayor's expression soon after the Land Use Commission made their decision to order that the landfill close in November 2009. The mayor went into the paper and said he was going to use those intervening months to convince the Land Use Commission on why Waimanalo should remain there. So they're pursuing that expansion
mm-hmm.
To go lateral and up. So those are the two prongs that they're going at.
Higher and wider.
Higher and wider, or change the boundaries so that we can go deeper and not have to go through an additional step.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hanneman has handed a pretty interesting set of cards to deal with this time. The Office of Planning, here's their official position statement. The Office of Planning recommends that the petition be denied because it does not comply with the standards of urban district boundaries under Section 1515-18 of the Hawaii Administrative Rules. The petitioner proposes to use the property. The petition is proposing to permanently reclassify 200.622 acres from the agriculture to the urban state land use district for purpose of expanding existing 107.5 acre sanitary landfill, which will have an estimated useful life of 15 years. The existing landfill is permitted on a special use permit. Now, what's going to happen in this process, they're going to get rid of one, if approved, get rid of one special use permit, but then it will also wipe out any conditional use permits. And for those listening out there, a conditional use permit is basically a document or a process that allows the public to have some input or allows administrators to be able to oversee the current activity or future activity in that. They want to strike that quietly and sneakily. So that's the incentive to have his staff to get behind the people and have them herd it toward the PVT landfill so that when this thing plopped down, and they don't want you to know that there's a state agency saying, we don't believe that this is a valid process and that it should not be expanded. And it goes on. The petitioner has not represented what urban use will exist in the petition area. The landfill has reached its capacity and closed. It suggests without committing the area may be as an open park, a use consistent with the current agriculture. Because of the settling and other stability issues, significant engineering challenges exist. And it goes on and it raises concerns about, and we'll come back and talk about this, but there's some serious issues with this. And you would think that Hanneman would fair and balanced, because he is managing the people's affairs, he would let us know about this document. This document was issued and sent, by the way, to the Land Use Commission, and we'll post this on carolcox.com on the website today. Do visit and feel free. But, Lucy?
Yeah, it's, again, the miss or underestimating the community's interest, you know, and then trying to limit participation
mm-hmm.
in something that is as significant as a landfill. That's going to be in the face of people for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and then to limit or prevent community conversation around these issues
mm-hmm.
is very disconcerting on the part of the city leadership. With responsibility. But, you know, I want to remind you about one thing, Carol, and that's going back to the neighborhood board. Before the neighborhood board split, a special meeting was convened, and board members from both the Waianae neighborhood board and the Nanakuli neighborhood board, they took a vote. The mayor asked for the community to allow him to stay at Waimanalo for 2 years, two additional years.
Mm-hmm.
The board took a vote, and that motion did not get the support of the board. The second motion they voted on was to allow the mayor to stay for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
On that vote, it was really interesting when I watched that occur. All present at that, all board members present, voted in opposition to the mayor's request to stay for 15 years. There was only one abstention. There was no votes. And if you go to the record, it'll be quite interesting to see who took that Hanalua position, the abstention position. But there was a clear message, clear decision that the Waianae Coast is in complete opposition to both the two-year, which would be the expansion, the going wide and high, and they're also in opposition to expanding for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the record, and that vote was called for by the mayor. He put the question, he influenced the question that was on the agenda for that night's meeting.
Mm-hmm.
This was a special meeting the community asked to have with the city.
Mm-hmm.
The meeting was convened, the votes were taken, and it's a clear statement.
That they
uncomplicated,
were.
Mm-hmm. simple, direct.
But he still went through with it.
He's still pushing through.
Yeah. So... We're going to talk more extensively about this and the representation of the political representation the Waianae Coast receives, and also the status of it and how it may be contributing to the demise, I'll describe it, of that community and all the problems of the woes and pains. But, you know, I'm going to take a break here, and I had asked occasionally, we all have to stop and eat for lunch and all, sometimes I'm out and about, and now this is not a commercial. It's not a paid commercial. This is just me wanting to share with you, as a friend of mine shared with me, a nice little lunch spot. And just wanted to say up front, this is not a paid commercial. So I had invited the people from Locks of Bagels to give us a call and chat with us and let us know a little bit about their store, because it is onolicious. And fresh and all. Alan, good morning. How are you?
Yes. Hi, good morning, Carol.
Yeah, this is Alan Alvarez, and Alan is the general manager of Locks of Bagels, and he is a master bagel maker?
I wouldn't call myself a master deal maker.
Well, they taste quite good, so I think you could call yourself that. In fact, I would nominate you as king of bagels.
Well, thank you very much, Carol.
Yeah, so, by the way, where are you located? Because a friend of mine, Michael Ostendorf, showed me, and I didn't know you guys even existed, but just by happenstance. So I think I wanted to just share, because people want a little more healthier eating and what have you. So tell us about some of this bagel, lots of bagel, and where are you located?
Yes, first of all, we're located on 111 Sand Island Access Road.
Mm-hmm.
That's heading towards Sand Island. On the left there, there's a little strip mall called the Sand Island Center. And we're there. We're the very first place on that strip mall. So right across from Kill Village.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And, the Bagel Company's been there since 1997. And they've been making fresh bagels ever since. And we took over last year, so far things are going well. You know, we've maintained the quality of the bagels, you know, still bake them fresh every day, adding on more flavors, taking on new wholesale business. We also wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
We provide bagels to pretty much all the Starbucks on Oahu. And most recently, Whole Foods Market here at Kahala just picked us up, and a lot of other cafes in town have it. So,
yes, and you make awesome sandwiches and all kinds of ingredients. What kind of bagels do you? You got sun dried tomato. You got what? What spinach? What do you make?
Oh yeah, we have over 20 flavors, Carol, as you know. Ranging from everything bagels, garlic, onion, and also sun-dried, like you said. We also have blueberry, banana walnut, strawberry guava. We also have a Hawaiian flavor bagel. So we have about 20 flavors to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use that any of those bagels to make the deli sandwiches, which we offer,
You can get them fresh, or you can get them in a sandwich. And what other services do you have, and what time are you open, and what days are you open?
Oh, yeah, we're open early. We're open 5 a.m. on the weekdays to 3 p.m., and on Saturdays we're open 6 a.m. to 2 p.m., and we are closed on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
We also make other bagel concoctions, you know. we have other bagel puffs, which is basically a bagel dough, and we put something inside. You know, we stuff it either with cream cheese, and a very popular one is the peanut butter and cream cheese, also chocolate and cream cheese, and we call them bagel puffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a ball. You just take it, you eat it, everything's already inside, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also make bagel chips, and some people say it's better than the ones that they get at Vegas. We also have bagel Danish, we have bagel dogs, all sorts of bagel stuff, about bagels.
Now, you know that there's a good market out there for vegetarian and organic and all. What do you have vegetarian sandwiches, vegetarian type bagels, or you said you'd make anything, but...
Well, you can. We do offer a veggie sandwich, and that has Japan cucumbers, sprouts, lettuce, tomatoes, onions, and we do make a whole grain bagel, which is a 9-grain bagel, and we use flaxseed with it. And we are looking at maybe doing organic,
Okay.
We just don't know yet, you know, about the pricing. They tend to be a little more expensive. But we are looking into it, and we're trying to see if we can get a good supplier of organic flour.
Okay. Well, anyway, as I say, I just want to share that as a friend that shared with me, and we love the place.
Thank you so much, Carol.
And I leave there feeling like I've had a decent meal, but not fattening, and for me, the type. I eat the vegetarian or the what have you, but...
Yeah.
So you have takeout, and you also...
Oh, yes.
So what is your phone number there, just right quick?
Oh, yes. Our phone number is 845-2855. And we do have a website, www.bagelshawaii.com. And you'll find everything about us there. You can even get a download. You can download the takeout menu, email us, learn a little more about us, look at some articles.
Okay.
And look at some pictures of our bagels. It's all there.
Okay.
So, bagelshawaii.com.
Bagelshawaii.com, and
yes,
you're at 845-2855.
Yes, sir.
And you Monday through Fridays, 5 a.m. to 3 p.m., and Saturdays, 6 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Yes, Carol. Yes, sir.
Okay. Hey, well, keep them hot and fresh for me because I'll be there soon. All right?
So. Okay, Carol.
All righty. Aloha. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Carol. Have a great day.
All
thank
right.
you.
All right. Okay. All righty. I just, as I say, nothing paid or commercial about that. It's just occasionally you go out there, and these times, and just being in Hawaii, people are always sharing with me, and so when you say hello and aloha and mahalo, it should go along with the few acts of aloha and mahalo. So anyway, it's just so good when you sit there and eat those, Lucy. I mean, it's hard to tear away from.
And here I am trying to lose weight. You're tempting me.
Anyway, we're discussing. I'm here with Lucy Gay, Miss Lucy Gay, and she's a community activist. Well, not an activist, just a person who's concerned with many issues and citizen. I sometimes think we get labeled with you're an environmentalist or you're an activist, and you've been pigeonholed, and immediately that presents you as some idiot, you know. And so when in fact we have extensive backgrounds in education, formal work and professional work. And so anyway, welcome back.
Thank you. You know, we're talking about different ways in which the community's attention has been sort of like misdirected, so that we don't keep our eyes on what's really going on. You know, there's another thing that I've noticed was thrown up this just a few months ago. I mean, you referred to it earlier in the conversation. You were talking about the moratorium on landfills, and that was an interesting thing that popped up. Two legislators from the Kapolei Eva side, one in the House, one in the Senate, introduced bills, exact same language, titled, you know, establishing a moratorium on landfills for the Waianae Coast. And in the community, it sounded like, wow, at last somebody's hearing us, you know, and they're going to go out there and create some kind of legal, you know, law that says that you can't do any more of this kind of work in on the coast.
Big Brother finally doing its job, going to protect the people.
Right. However, upon closer reading of the bill, there were some big holes in it. The title, like I said, was very encouraging, but the details basically defined, when the bill defined the Leeward Coast, it left out a number of communities on the coast. The bill defined Leeward Coast as Nanakuli, Maile, Waianae, Makaha, as those communities where no landfill shall be established. That's the moratorium. Well, you know, Waimanalo isn't in, depending on how you define it, is it in Nanakuli or is it in Honu'uli'uli? Where is it? Is it in Eva? It's one of those on the boundary kind of stuff. And the Nanakuli B is actually in Lualualei. And that was not mentioned as part of the definition for the Leeward Coast. And then it focused only on one type of landfill. The moratorium applied only to municipal solid waste landfills. And you know, Carol, that there are other kinds of landfills. And the one that, you know, has people's attention right now is the PVT landfill. That is not a municipal solid waste landfill.
Right, C&D,
construction demolition landfill. But that was not mentioned. So it's as if municipal solid waste was the only issue that Bill was going to address, and it really wasn't going to address the concerns of not just the PVD people, but there was a couple years back an initiative on another landowner's part to establish a C&D landfill just mouth of an elementary school. So the bill was very deceptive, I think, in if people didn't take time to read the details.
Mm-hmm.
The last that I heard about what happened with this bill is that it was deferred in the House, but it made it through the Senate, and so it crossed over. And the House heard it, and they have since cleaned up the description of the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And so it says moratorium on from Ka'ena to Waimanalo. And then it went even further to say no more landfills in the Waianae District, Ko'olauloa, Ko'olaupoko District, Wailua District, leaving the Central and Honolulu District, where literally you can't put a landfill there because it's sitting on a water source.
Above the water table.
Yeah, so you don't have to mention that. But basically it says no more landfills pretty much for the island of Oahu, except Waimanalo.
Who's pushing that bill? What groups? I understood that someone had conveyed to me that there was part of the Iron Workers Union members were supporting it. Is that any fact to that?
The only thing I know is that one can look at who shows up to testify and support
and
the bill.
And who are they?
And what I remember was the Iron Workers, some sort of arm, I don't know, a charitable arm or something, but it's... In their title, they have the word Iron Workers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, let's see, I think that was about the only folks who spoke for it, because the county environmental service representative was in opposition.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Health at the state side was in opposition. Their opposition was primarily because it was a home rule issue.
Mm-hmm.
The General Contractors Association and a number of contracting companies were in opposition. Let's see. And then there was the Kailua Neighborhood Board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kailua jumps in there because, you know, Kapaa is still a viable place for landfills. So they, too, spoke in opposition to
this bill.
Yeah, and then when they went forward and said they were going to ban it, you know, put the moratorium pretty much across the whole island, Kailua came in support of the moratorium. But Waimanalo is still hanging out there.
Okay.
So I think this, the committee report from the House to the House, I think it's the Judiciary, asked that committee to take a look at the issue of an exemption of one. I guess it's kind of like referencing the super ferry kind of issue.
Yeah.
You know, can you do something and yet only favor one?
Right. Well, you should. And the Supreme Court has already ruled on many things, but then,
But Carol, there's one more piece. If this law takes effect, and let's suppose that Waimanalo survives and it is the exception, or let's take the other scenario, all landfills are banned on the island of Oahu.
Right.
The law doesn't take effect till 2050.
Mm-hmm. And that'll give Hanneman time to become congressman, senator, and president, the second president from Hawaii, and then ruler of all waste. But anyway.
You know, what I wish is that in the interim, should the bill survive in any way and become an act, I think the more cogent thing to do is to use that period between today and 2050, seriously looking at how do we get out of this business of burying recyclable, usable resources?
Well, he's been at the Hilton, Hanneman is, and he promised to come in with new and waste energy and on and on and on, and none of that has materialized. But as I had spoken earlier, I wanted to convey some of the things, going back to this position statement of the planning department of, and the State Office of Planning. Now, they raised some issues. They were concerned, key issues identified by the Office of Planning, the topography. They're concerned about the stability, the type of soil, that it might fracture during the explosions. It talked about drainage. The State Department of Health notice of violation issued a notice indicates that leachate from the landfill drainage control system, as Ashmont Field, has had to be pumped and transported to Wynice treatment plant. But it goes on and it talks about hazardous substance and adverse effects of adjacent residential communities. And as I say, it will be posted on carolcox.com. But here's one that struck me, and I want to talk extensively about it for shortly. Hazardous substance. And listen to this. The presence of asbestos in the current landfill due to inadequate monitoring of waste accepted for deposition raises the concern that leachate from the storm events could be contaminated. In addition, a question of whether mercury switches from the older cars might have been included in automobile shredders sent to the landfill by the city and county's auto recycling contractor has also been raised, although not yet definitively proven. Now, your senator on that side, Senator Colleen Hanabusa, in February 2009 issue of Environment Hawaii, has a quote. The Snitcher Steel lawsuit raises serious concerns as to what is being placed in the landfill. Now, what it's talking about, Snitcher Steel was being sued, or is being sued, or charges that by a private entity, another private entity, that they are responsible for putting mercury, elevating the levels of mercury. Now, this is not in defense of anyone, but here's the state senator there who's chiming in on this, and a couple of interesting notes here. On occasion, we talk about environmental justice. And you know, the people in Waianae say, well, the people in Kahala, it would never happen in Kahala. But the interesting point there that Kahala and Waianae shares is that they're both represented by senators and city councilmen, and they all come to the tables having equal voting power. How is it that Waimanalo District, or Waianae District, has all of these woes when you have now the chairman of the state senate is Colleen Hanabusa, and the chairman of the city council is Todd Otto? Something falls through the crack there, and I think I can put my finger on it. That is, they both work for Jeff Stone in his interest. Todd Otto is employed by Jeff Stone while he's being a city councilman. And so Colleen Hanabusa has gotten benefits, and she fights heavily, you know, for the closure of the Waimanalo Gulch landfill. But in turn, she was actively representing as an attorney in private practice Pine Ridge, Bedminster, a company that's situated right next to PVT, who wants to process municipal solid waste in the heart of the Waianae District. She also, there was an access road, emergency access road, and there was a resolution that they say we need to relieve the people when there's an emergency. Colleen Hanabusa represented Pine Ridge in that matter. So there's something wrong. I'm beginning to see that it's not environmental justice or environmental injustice. It is about self-serving individuals who have found their way in the government and seem to be just hovering. And there's a direct connection. So some of the things when she talk about the concerns of the mercury switches, and I might share with you that mercury in the landfill can be attributed to many sources. One, when you as a resident take mercury in a thermometer and you dump it in the trash, or you take it to the transfer stations, that material from the transfer station goes directly to the landfill. There's no checking, no monitoring. And as the Office of Planning stated, they did monitor some of the waste, like asbestos. And there were also instances where proven that waste management had employees who were taking favors from haulers, who were taking money and favors to, and they fired this individual because he was not keeping track of the. So for her to come out, the Senator Hanakabusa to come out and make the statement that about the mercury and attributing it to a one company, when in fact the city and county of Honolulu, through the permission of the EPA and the standards, allow you and I to dump electronic waste into the landfill, which has mercury. And, you know, just on and on, you got medical waste, which contains mercury. You have light bulbs and fluorescent bulbs, which contain mercury. Now, I had one to say, well, the trash that you put in the curbside bin goes to H-Power. Well, see, that's for the blind to believe that. The problem is there is, in any given year, at least 100 days, H-Power is shut down. And in turn, that trash is diverted to the landfill. So there are some serious concerns. And next week, I'm actually going to be bringing out a lot of this information on, and let the community, we're just going to discuss, is it environmental justice? Can the Waianae Coast continue to say and attribute some of the shortcomings and shortfalls over there, the bad traffic, the potholes, the crime, can they attribute it to environmental justice or just injustice from the system, or is it that the people that they pick to represent them?
You know, Carol, I think it's not one, it's all of those, and I think that's what makes it such a huge concern. If it were just one, you could just aim your points at them and go after it, but it's everywhere, it's pervasive. And I don't know if it may be in some way, we're looking at all the externals bringing these, you know, perpetrating things on the people, but I think it's also the other way too. I don't think there's some reciprocity, I think, going on in that the residents on the coast, through their condition, I think, of just poverty, puts them at a underdog position when dealing or deliberating these problems. The educational system, the DOE's presence on the coast for, I'd say, the last 30 years at least, is a big... I mean, I'm not picking at... We do have successes. We have some wonderful things happening in some classrooms.
Right.
But if we just go with, well, you know, on those days it's good, and then not see the other part,
right,
it's really easy to gloss over the role and responsibility of education in communities. If you can't know what you don't know, so how do you know what you need to know? That's through education. And if our classrooms, our campuses are flawed, generation after generation, how do you improve or up the ante on the part of the citizens so that they're not underdogs, but they're peers. They're citizens confronting citizens.
Right.
Right now, if I were to define it, it'd be like client, customer,
right,
to government. You know, we'll take care of you. Don't worry your little head about it. We'll figure it all out.
Right. Well, that's the Madoff principle now, because what it seems to be, you know, we had that recent incident with Madoff, who took people's money, went off to invest it, and then in turn later find out that Madoff was making off. And so this is the same scenario, because the people expect improvement. They want, even in the schools, they want their kids to be educated.
So they go to the booth and they pick someone to do just that, because they can't go down there and negotiate and look at the budget and sign legislation. So that's why we have representatives. The key is, no matter how big or great the crave is for that community to educate itself and have smooth roads and more than one way in and lower drugs, someone needs to go abroad, the Madoff, and invest the people's interest, because ultimately they can, you can have all kinds of public meetings, but eventually it takes a leader, a representative with integrity and not conflicted and not selling out to one individual or one entity. And that is what I'm beginning to believe, because I specialize in looking at situations in environmental racism, environmental justice. And what I'm seeing now is that in this instance, the environmental justice and the environmental racism is being perpetrated by their representative to some great degree, not 100%. And it is shameful that I take ownership to that statement. I don't want you to be associated with that. But, you know, and anybody that have any reason to challenge me, call me up, or I'll be happy to discuss further and share with you specifics. But this is, at some point, we have to stop and ask, how can you have equal representation in the Senate, equal representation in city council, equal representation in the House, and yet you have the worst situation there is? Not only that, you are the chairman. Your representative is the head of the state Senate, the head of the city council, and in turn, you are left with one street in and one street out. And drugs and rampant and low income, low jobs and what have you, with the $75 million tax break, promises that you're going to create jobs, and you see things taking a dive. Yeah. But, you know, we have about two more minutes, but go ahead and real quickly if you got.
Yeah, thanks, Carol. I think the closing statement I'd like to make is to, number one, recognize that everybody has a stake in it. What happens in their community. If things are going to get better, then we have to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
Learn as much as you can. And I'll continue to say, you cannot know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So get on the ball and start knowing.
And start voting. You know, I keep saying this. Leave your babies at home, and if you think that that's a selling point of a politician, that he kissed your baby, and you got a photograph, leave your babies at home. Go there ready to demand and ready to come back and ask for what is rightfully yours. Ask of your representatives what is their responsible job, not these favoritisms. And I got extensive documentation now, and I'm going to be talking next week about extensively about this. But again, I appreciate you coming by, and for those of you out there, so don't go out and pick on Miss Lucy Gay about this. These statements, when I speak about the inadequacies of the misrepresentation, this is solely on the shoulders of Carol Cox and the Carol Cox Show. If you have issues with it, like they say on the streets, bring it on, because I am sick and tired of being sick and tired. It's crazy. That we should see things develop in line. The landfill should not be an issue, you know. And so there are a great many issues and that are out there, but I just can't believe that we can't work it out. And I have great hopes for the Waianae Coast, because it is a beautiful place. The people are great.
Mm-hmm.
This is not in my backyard, but that's not an issue. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of their representatives should mm-hmm. stand up and quit whispering in the back rooms with their special interests, Mr. Oppo and Ms. Hanabusa, who's working directly for the Jeff Stone conglomerate. It has to stop, period. You know, the Colina mess, it's crazy. They violate the law. Hanabusa, for example, never has chimed in publicly on Colina closing a boat ramp that was required to be there publicly. So she skirts all the issues. But anyway, I will look forward to next week to talking, and I really appreciate it. And I want to say hi to the people out there at the Ohana Bird Club.
I gave a talk to them last night. And so, Lucy Gay, thank you for coming in. And this is the Carol Cox Show. Aloha.